Well, welcome to episode 8 of the Education, Innovation, and Technology Podcast. We're here again with Mr. Carl Hooker and Mr. Chad Brinkley. I'm Robert Garrett, so we're going to jump right in it. This will be a short 20-minute quick podcast, but having such a great conversation, we wanted to extend this into two episodes. So, Chad, Carl, how y'all doing today?
Doing great.
Doing great. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir. So, Chad, why don't you...
This has been
Go ahead. The Zoom gives a little bit of a delay. When you're in a hallway trying to dodge somebody.
That's right. But you know, hey, we'll figure it out. This has been such a great conversation, and kind of where I wanted to kick off on this episode is to kind of look back at a little bit what we were talking about in our last episode about creativity and about identifying the issues that we need to look at. And we've brought up Sir Ken Robinson a couple times, and I really kind of want to hop back into him because the person that he has the most watched TED Talk in the history of TED Talks. Mm-hmm. More people have watched his TED Talk on, do we kill creativity in schools? Is creativity being stifled at schools? And it's insane to me that that's the most watched TED Talk. There's a lot of TED Talks on lots of issues, but apparently this is a question that people are very, very interested in and they watch it. I mean, like, that's kind of insane that's the most watched one. So my thought is, as we come off of a year like this and we have all this opportunity and whatever, you know, I want to know what you guys think about this, but I've just finished, and Robert and I were reading Creativity in Schools, Ken Robinson's book, Creativity in Schools, and we were reading it with a group of educators, and we were just kind of doing it as a group. And one of the things that I took away from that book and looking at it is, a lot of times when we read a book or we go to a conference or we hear someone with their ideas, or maybe even, you know, with you, Carl, and some consulting you do, a lot of times we think that whatever someone else did is what we have to do. I mean, like that book, Creativity in Schools, there's all of these stories of what different schools did in different situations or whatever. And the trap that we fall into is we go, well, here's the 3-ring binder of what they did. Right. And we bring it to our teachers and go, okay, everybody turn to page 2. We're going to do what they did and we'll have the same results. And what I think and what I'm interested to hear, you know, your thoughts on is the reason we're doing what we're doing is because we haven't had the conversations. What I want to do is look at what all of these other schools have done and have the conversation that they had to get to what they did, not actually do exactly what they did, because it may not work in our context. But what were those conversations that they were having about their context, their demographics, their location, that made them come up with what they did? I think that's where we get started in this next step of what we're going to do. I mean, what are the conversations that we need to have?
Yeah, I think people skip right to the what and how, right? They go over the why. They just want to know what is it? How do I do it? Whatever it is, right? And so those conversations, I mean, there a lot of it is just making sure that everyone has some kind of common or shared beliefs. And I think sometimes that's the hardest part. I mean, because what is creative to you and I may not be to others. And so I think the other thing that you'll run into, and this is common. I can't remember. It was Ed Catmull. I don't know if you've ever seen him. There's a book called Creativity Inc. And he wrote, it's a great book. There's a podcast that I was watching him on the other day. He's former Pixar CEO. And what he was saying is that a lot of times we're actually success is when you're successful in something, it actually lends itself to conservatism, not in terms of political conservatism, but just in terms of like, let's not take any risk. Let's be a little safer because we've been successful. We're going to stop. And he was saying, like, the first person who wrote Toy Story, right? After that, it's like every other film needs to be just like Toy Story, whatever that formula is, let's keep churning it out, you know, or the Avengers films, right? That they're all, you can kind of watch one or the other and not know which one is which, because they want that formula that's been successful. And so what ends up happening is you end up actually failing long-term with that because you're not changing. Schools are also prey to this. And I think a lot of times they have to have that belief that, or at least some sense of urgency that they need to improve and create and do something different, because otherwise they go the way of the taxi cab with Uber, the way of the hotel chain with Airbnb, the way of Walmart and Toys R Us are going toward Amazon, you know, like all of those companies that held stead pat could have done something differently. I always tell the story of Blockbuster. You know, that they were offered in 2002, this little company, Netflix, came up to them and said, would you want to buy us for $2 million? And Blockbuster, it could, right now we could all be watching Blockbuster.com and chilling,
right?
Not Netflix and chilling, you know? So it's, you know, Tiger King could be on Blockbuster.com. They were so, like, their model was so successful at that moment in time that they didn't think about needing to go into this internet thing or CD, you know, DVDs in the mail. What a crazy idea is that? And so they passed on it. And this isn't about making money either. It's more about, what do we need to do as schools? So again, going back to the original question about creativity, I think you have to look internally and think, you know, first of all, is our culture ready for this? Because if they're not, you know, strategy, what is it? What's the old phrase? Culture eats strategy for breakfast. That's true.
Right.
Anytime you can try to, as many strategies and plans and policies, and this is the thing, and here's our missions. But if the culture is not accepting of it, it will fail miserably. So no you doubt. Have to ready a culture for that. And some of that comes right at the top, guys. It's positions like you, like me. Like, what are we doing to model risk-taking, model failure, model creativity? And show teachers, like, man, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm going to try to figure this out, though, which we want the teachers to also do with their kids and be like, wow, right. how do I make this thing? This little Sphero thing whirl across the stage. I don't know what's going on. You know, asking them questions. I think it just models that way. So that's another one of my big sayings is, like, kids won't take risks if teachers don't take risks, and teachers won't take risks if leaders don't take risks. And I think that just trickles down. So when you get to the heart of creativity, it is about that challenge, the risk taking, the possible failure that comes of it. And again, failure being not necessarily the best word in education sometimes.
Right. Well,
I think that's where I mess up every day, all the time.
One of the things that I talk about in a lot of my talks with teachers and people is, especially young kids, the older kids, they're still relatively new. I mean, like, the kids who are juniors and seniors right now, they've had devices most of their life. I mean, like, they've had touchscreen devices most of their life. Now we're kind of getting,
yep,
we're kind of getting to that level. But, you know, you go to elementary school, and I say it's the heart of creativity. You know, the thing that I point out is they don't know they can't. And they're not scared to push buttons, and they're not scared to try. And we have to give them that space.
Yes.
And we have to let them explore and do some of that. You know, you were talking about kind of getting satisfied. And one of the things that I also, you know, share with people is, you know, I hold up an iPhone and I say, you know, we get a new one of these every single year. Right. And we all know it's coming, and we know it's whatever. But there has never been an iPhone release where, you know, especially in the early days when Jobs is still there and he goes, hey, guys, great job. We just put out the most innovative tool of all time. Now, let's just go mediocre from here on out. I mean, like, great job, pat on the back, everybody, you know, take a couple weeks off. You know, we've basically changed the game. So no, it's like, hey, good job. And you better be ready for next year because we want to be better than we were here. And we don't, you know, we're like, well, that Jobs, he was crazy to expect everybody to keep getting better. But yet every year there's a line around the block to get the new thing. And so we could totally apply those theories and those things to our learning so that we got kids lined up around the block of, man, I did so much cool stuff last year. I can't wait to get back. I can't wait to get to that next thing so that I can do that. I mean, and I think there's a lot that we could learn from that.
Well, that's there's
the
a saying
ultimate assessment.
That's right. There's a saying that the only thing that likes it, change is a wet baby, right? And so I think that, I mean, it's difficult, but I do think it's important because here's a challenge is just like what you were saying. I use the Blockbuster example all the time. You walk in the average K-12 classroom, it looks no different than it looked in 1950. There might be a smart board on the wall, but we're still in rows. We're still doing the thing. Now, that's not every class, and a lot of them are beginning to change. But I think painting a picture for what that change looks like is important. And then, you know, one of the things teachers will talk to you a lot about is time, right? So how can we show you ways of being more efficient through the tech so you can teach the standards through the projects? Because a lot of times when I talk about project-based, Chad and I were talking about the other day, is they'll say, well, I don't have time to teach it and then do the project. And I say, no. Use the project to teach it, right? You don't need more time. Just don't teach it the way you were. Teach it this way. And so one of the things Chad and I are working on is getting them to just do that about four times a year. And they always come to me when they try it, and they're like, man, the kids like this a lot more, right? And so my question to you is, what are some tangible ideas that our teachers who are listening could take away for different ways of teaching standards that they're teaching already, but using the tech that they have in their room, right? Because one of the things, Carl, you're so good at is dreaming it up, thinking it up. So paint that picture for some of the teachers that when they're listening to this, they can walk away today with something.
It takes one thing in their mind, and it has to be that growth mindset of like, I can give up some control in my classroom. And I think that's the first step in anything I'm about to suggest, because really what I suggest is nothing new or major or amazing. It's more of the idea that take everything that you're doing and all the effort and energy you're putting into creating these amazing lessons or whatever it is, and shift it and say, okay, I'm not gonna be the one creating it. The kids are gonna be the ones creating it. So I'm gonna give them a choice. They're gonna have, and you can limit their choices if you want to. There's some thought that, you know, if you give them all the choices in the world of what they want to create on, then there's some paralysis of analysis in that sense. But so I always say, like, have them come up with an idea of like, I want you guys to create something that demonstrates you understand this concept, whatever the concept is. You can use, you know, Google Slides, you can use Book Creator, you can use Explain Everything, you can use, you know, and then also be willing to where if a student's like, well, I want to try to do something different and explain it, listen to that and go, well, how are you going to try to explain it? You know, I want to do, I want to make a rap song in GarageBand. Like, well, okay, go ahead, you know, try it. And so, and you don't have to be the expert at all of it. And I think that's the hardest thing. And as a tech person, I know that I'm not the expert at everything. And I always, and my kids now are running circles on me with TikTok and stuff that I'm trying to figure out. So I'm always like leaning in and listening and being receptive to that. So again, your job as a teacher now is you are the experience. You are the person who has the wisdom and the experience. They are the eager learners. Let them figure out that tech part of it, but you make sure that it's realigning back to the standards, because it's still about the standards. It's not and the learning, obviously. It's not about what's in the bottom of the textbook or the back page of the textbook and whatever that is. It's still about what can you give them. And then again, giving them, being free with the idea of giving them choice. And then the other challenge would be, after you've done that once, go back through and say, like, all right, all of you created these amazing artifacts, these learning artifacts. Now what I want you to do is do it again with a different standard, but this time use something different. So don't just get hooked on Google Slides. And that's the biggest thing I've been working on lately with schools is like, if Google Slides is not the answer to every, okay, guys, we're gonna make a project. It's a Google Slide. Like, there are hundreds of different things you can do than Google Slides. You can make infographics. You can create a virtual space and co-spaces. You can, make a thing link that has hyperlink things on. I mean, lots of, again, I'm spouting out tools here, but the idea is, again, it's not about that tool. It's about how are they demonstrating that understanding, and then make them a little uncomfortable. You know, you've used Google Slides 4 times, little Johnny. It's time for you to try, you know, Keynote or do something in iMovie or something like that. So I think that's the next thing. So that's my thinking with teachers. I would say find 2 or 3 things. If you feel like you're comfortable with them, that's great. Don't feel like you have to know everything about the tool. Let the kids figure it out. Believe it or not, they will do it. And in fact, they love it. They love it when you as a teacher go, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you come up and show the class? They love taking that microphone for that moment. So I would say try to do that as much as you can. And then, of course, then recenter, make sure they're always on task and going to that line of what the standard is they're trying to learn.
Yeah,
I love what you said.
Go ahead. I always tell them to.
Go ahead, Chad.
I always tell them to.
Zoom, man.
It's give them some point.
What is that, like a 3-second delay? I mean, golly.
Yeah, it's like you're in Baghdad. I always tell them, I'm like, okay, so if you don't know, don't say, I don't know. Say, I'm going to make a game of this and say 5 extra points for the person who figures out how to change the font size, or 5 points to whoever figures out how to change the background. Because then you're not even admitting that you don't know. You're saying, I'm going to give you guys some room to learn, and I'm going to learn on the sly. I mean, you know, that it doesn't have to be that relinquishing of control, or that say, you know, that I have that feeling to be the smartest person. Just ask the questions better and give them some room to teach each other and you. And then you're just like, see, I knew that that's the way you change the background, but I just wanted to make sure you guys could figure it out.
I was just testing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, in a conversation like this with 3 guys who are passionate about what they talk about, we're going to have some of those little Zoom talking over each other moments. But the you know, the thing about it, too, I love the ideas, but I love what you said earlier. The teacher's the experience in the room. They don't have to necessarily be the knowledge in the room. And that's a shift, right? I mean, in 1980, when you have encyclopedias, the teacher was paid to know and then teach. Now they don't have to know it all. It's okay. You know, give, and you mentioned this in the last podcast. we do a lot of things in isolation. So like in schools, when we want to teach keyboarding, everybody stop what you're doing. We're going to keyboard, right? Now stop what you're doing. We're going to do math. And I think what you were talking about, merging those, is really important. Okay, we want to learn keyboarding. Well, let's take your spelling words, and instead of writing them, let's type them. But just make sure your hands are in the home keys, right? So I think that we can start merging some of the learning and it be more robust. Because one of the things we do in our elementary schools, we're trying to teach the kids Keynote and slides and all that. But when the teachers ask me, well, do I just teach it to them? I say, no, just ask them to create a Keynote presentation. They'll teach themselves how to use it. It's intuitive. They'll figure it out, right? So I like that idea, and I love Chad's idea. You don't have to – hey, 5 extra points if you can figure it out. Who's going to figure it out? They'll figure it out. And then the last part that's so important, Carl, that I really love, is letting them take the keys to the car, right? Yep. They want to – hey, you mean – because I think sometimes it's okay to admit, like, I don't know how to do this. So-and-so, do you know how – yeah, why don't you show us? Because then they feel like, man, a big dog at that point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's also – then the next step of that would be, of course, the assessment part of it. So – assessment gets a bad rap, but I mean, there's the three types of assessment, right? The assessment for learning, the assessment of learning, and the assessment as learning. And that's what ultimately we want to get our kids to do. This is where they're self-assessing. So you go back to that keyboarding example. One of the smartest or silliest decisions, I don't know which, that we made at one point was we were paying for a keyboard software that was like just teaching kids how to keyboard. And it was okay, and it cost a lot of money, and we got some good data out of it. But at one point, one of my team, and that's the other thing in leadership, make sure you listen to your – I hire people smarter than me, because I do that on purpose. I want to listen to what their ideas are. It's not all about me. It's about everyone's ideas, right? And so this one at Tech came up to me, and she said, you know, I could create something in Numbers that could be a shared document, and we could have the kids do every day. Is there's these little free online kind of typing things, and like for 10 minutes – we'll just have them self-assess. So they'll do a running record of it. They can see their own scores, and they can keep track of their scores and see what they need to beat each time. So they're internalizing that part of it, going, okay, I know what my score is from yesterday. I need to do it better. And by the way, some of the bigger kind of projects happen to be the reading paper that they, or the writing paper they had to complete anyway, or the history paper they had to write. So again, merging those together. And so we quit paying for that software and just used like a little numbers sheet that was shared amongst all the kids and their iPads with their teacher. And they were able to actually, they typed a lot better, faster, because they were motivated and they were self-assessing.
Right.
Which is, again, it doesn't happen magically overnight. This takes time. But I think that's just another part of it, another big component.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a heart. We've got like 2 minutes before we have to let Carl go. And so I have one final question, Robert, if you don't mind me asking.
Go.
You said earlier in our other episode about going to speak to legislatures. This is what I want to know, because the three of us could sit in a room or on Zoom or whatever and talk for hours about this stuff and have so much energy and so much passion about it. Where do we go from here, Carl? How do we start to have these conversations with the people who actually make the decisions, and how do we get them to see what we see? I mean, like, what steps do we take?
Well, we just have to keep sharing, guys. I think that's it. I think we need to create. I mean, I started blogging in 2005, 2006, something like that. It's been through a lot of changes since then. But I mean, the more you share on Twitter, on social, the more examples we can give to people, key people in certain places. There are parents in our communities that need to know this stuff, and then they have some actionable change that they can do. I mean, I'm in Austin, so I'm in the state capitol. So of course I have access to a lot of those people. Not everybody does, right? And so how do you make those connections? Now that we're virtual, why not bring in a legislator and say, hey, I want you to come into my class today. You can come in virtually even. And I want you just to kind of, we're going to ask you some questions. We're going to, and they'll listen to teachers and kids. They won't necessarily listen to us because we're administrators, right? But if a kid says something, their ears will perk up. So the more that we can give kids a platform or a voice to those people, that's how we start making that change happen. And I think we just have to keep sharing as much as we can, and never feel like you're oversharing. I'm like, just anything that's great or a little thing that a kid did, have them share it, have the teacher share it. I think that's important.
Absolutely. Man, Carl, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Tell people how they can find you, and then we'll sign off.
Well, I live down the street. No, don't find me that way. I'm CarlHooker.com is my website, at Mr. Hooker, as was mentioned earlier on the first episode, on Twitter. Don't follow at Hooker. That's a totally different person. Not appropriate. I'll get a lot of that, by the way. At Hooker Tech on Instagram. And I've got a Facebook fan page. And what else? Yeah, that's pretty much. Oh, my blog, of course, HookedOnInnovation.com. I've been writing on it for, like I said, I think 14 or 15 years now. And I still put out, I try to put out some regular content once every, I try to do at least weekly, but it ends up being more like once a month or maybe two or three times a month. I got to be better about that. Oh, I also have two podcasts, Learning Unleashed by ISTE and then Undisrupted for Tech Leaders through Future Ready Schools that I do pretty regularly as well. So wherever you can find podcasts.
That's right. Yeah, I sent you Carl a message
Hooker,
the other
not
day.
Not Hooker, yeah.
That's right. I sent you a message the other day on Twitter. I really enjoyed one of the podcast episodes. I think you're doing a really good job with that. So everybody go subscribe to those two podcasts.
We'll put those links and all that in the description and everything so everybody can have access to that. Carl, I thank you so much. You're a hero of mine, but I also feel like you're a colleague and you're a friend because of the passion that we share, and I appreciate your approach and your availability to us, and we just couldn't be happier to have you, and sometime we'd love to have you back. So thanks again for joining us. And guys, if you
thanks
don't know,
so
everybody check this out, and we appreciate everybody listening, and we'll see you real soon with another episode, and hope everybody's having a great summer.